We just started recording as you burped.
Nice. Welcome.
Welcome.
To another episode.
Of Dark and
Creepy
Things.
With
Frank.
And
Scout.
Yay.
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 Yeah, this is episode 30.
30 or a special edition?
A special edition?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yet to be decided.
Yep.
Before we get started though, we should thank our patrons.
Yes.
So, Bitten by the Bug, Japanese Textiles.
Thanks, Mum.
Always thanks, Mum. Ira Francis, creator of the Bright Side comic.
Thank you.
Regular Creepers, Sindel.
Yes, who? Yes, Sindel.
Sean.
Yes.
And Maya.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you for
being
our patrons.
So, this is a special edition.
Yes. There are seven of us in the room right now.
Say hi, everyone. Hi. So we're currently sitting with our chosen family.
Our family. We thought we'd have a family edition after a family dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, to make that fun.
Well, no, everyone should introduce themselves first.
Oh,
who have we got? Start on this side.
Hi, I'm Xander.
Hi, I'm Moana.
Hi, I'm Shreya.
I'm Sindel, I'm back.
And Sindel's back.
Hi, I'm Ivy.
Yay! Okay.
Yeah. And of course you've got Scout.
And me, Frank.
Yay.
And two sleeping, snoring dogs.
Yeah.
We're less interruptive than having four cats trying to steal
much
the mic.
Less interruptive. So what's going to happen with this article, Scout? We couldn't decide who was going to lead this particular episode.
Mm.
So Scout and I have both got an article, and then the family get to choose.
Yes.
What we do. So who wants to? Do you want to go? What's your article, Scout?
Okay. So aptly named, I have chosen the topic of the family. Who were an Australian New Age cultish group in Victoria near Melbourne.
Well, you've got my ears.
I can see a few ears and eyes. Have got, ooh, can you beat that, Frank? Can you beat that?
Well, mine is the Salish Sea Human Foot Discoveries, which was a collection of 20 detached human feet.
Oh my god, that's so for me.
You've got Mo's interest.
In Canada.
Ooh! Oh,
that's definitely for me.
Does Mo's name come up in there?
No.
Am I busted?
Bring out your feet collection, Mo.
But you got to save the little toes for me.
They're in the cellar.
Okay, so, Xander, what's your vote? Feet or
so
the family?
Torn. I feel like I love the story about the family, but I do know a bit about it, so I'm going to go with the feet.
Yes, one for feet.
Because it's
one for feet. True, true.
Mo.
I do like hearing about cults.
Ooh,
family.
Ooh. One for me.
One for.
That's surprising. We thought you'd gone Canadian feet.
I know. I already know too much about it.
Of course you know about the
you
fucking feet.
You did it.
You had it here, folks.
Yeah,
confession live on podcast.
No testimony. I'm not a girl.
Shreya, foot or family? Feet or family?
Family.
The cult wins. Sindel, feet or family?
Family.
Are we allowed to vote?
No. Ivy, feet or family?
Family.
Sorry.
I thought my feet would win. I thought it was kind of funny that these...
I don't know of the feet.
I vote for the feet. I'll do the feet on a different podcast,
but the family want to hear about the family.
Oh,
yeah. I do think it's appropriate.
It is appropriate, right?
Fair enough.
I've had this one bookmarked for a while.
I concede defeat.
Also, where's defeat?
Defeat! I'm defeated. I was defeated. I took my feet.
Defeat.
Well, about 20 people were
deep feet. It could
have
been 10.
Oh, yeah. No, wait. Was it all left feet?
Were they human? It could have been dog feet.
It was human. It was human feet.
Oh, okay.
It was said to be...
Well, some of its feet. Sorry.
Okay. Okay, Scout. You start then.
Oh, yeah. The family. And it kind of came up for me because last week, the head of... The person who started this cult, the family, passed away as well, which is quite old. Anyway, the family, also called the Santini Kent... Yeah, I'm going to suck pronouncing these words.
Santiniketan.
Yeah, Park Association. And the Great White Brotherhood is an Australian New Age group formed in the mid-1960s under the leadership of yoga teacher Anne Hamilton Byrne, born Evelyn Grace Victoria Edwards. Oh my God, she didn't even use her real name. 30th of December, 1921, and yeah, died just not long ago, 13th of June, 2019. The group's headquarters was raided by the police on the 14th of August, 1987, and all children were removed from the premises. In June 1993, Hamilton Byrne was charged with conspiracy to defraud and to commit perjury by falsely registering the births of three unrelated children as their own triplets. That's weird.
Okay.
You're just picking three children and be like, they're my triplets. She pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of making a false declaration and was fined $5,000. So I think, Frank, when I said to you, oh, Anne Hamilton Byrne passed away, and you're like, yeah, did she ever serve jail time or whatever? And I was like, pretty sure she just got a slap on the wrist for everything. And she
okay.
Did. Yeah, and she did. Does anyone know much about the family?
No, not much.
Did you know it was so close to where we live?
Yes. No.
Have people seen the documentary? Remember we went with Robin to go see
it? Isn't it in Hillsville or something?
No, it's out west.
Is it?
Out west?
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Did anyone see the documentary that came out? I know you and I went to go see it.
Yeah, we went for
it.
It's
called The Family.
It's called The Family.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
It was a few years ago now.
I don't think it was a full-length documentary.
No, this was a full feature-length documentary.
Yeah, it came out a couple of years ago.
We saw it probably 2 years ago.
Yeah, it would have been about that.
Yeah, it was, yeah, it's really interesting. All right, so religious claims. The family teaches an eclectic mixture of Christianity and Hinduism with other Eastern and Western religions on the principle that spiritual truths are universal. The children study the major scriptures of these religions and also the works of fashionable gurus including Sri Chinmoy Meher Baba and Rajneesh.
Rajneesh.
The group has an inner circle who justify their actions by their claim to be reincarnations of the apostles of Jesus.
Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Sounds legit.
Yeah. The basis of the family's philosophy was that Hamilton Byrne, so the woman,
mm-hmm.
Was the reincarnation of Jesus Christ and a living God. I like her confidence.
Points for trying.
Yes, points for confidence. Yeah. Jesus was said to be a great master who came down to earth, and the group believed that Buddha and Krishna were other enlightened beings who similarly came down to help humanity. Hamilton Byrne was regarded as being in the same category as these teachers. One adopted daughter, Sarah Hamilton Byrne, later described the group's beliefs as a hodgepodge, quote, hodgepodge.
Not hodgepodge.
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 Am I right in pronouncing that?
Yes, you are, but it's normally hodgepodge.
Hey, she had weird parents.
True.
That would be can't why it's her. In quotation marks.
Yes.
Yeah, hodgepodge. Because yes. I'm sure they interviewed her in that documentary
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
So she described the group's beliefs as a, quote, hodgepodge of Christianity and Eastern mysticism. Yes.
Interesting.
Very interesting. Okay. So we go to the history and beginnings. So around 1964, Raynor Johnson was hosting regular meetings of a religious and philosophical discussion group led by Hamilton Byrne at Santiniketan. Oh, wow. That was great. His home at Fernie Creek in the Dandenong Ranges on the eastern outskirts of Melbourne. Also connected was a series of weekly talks he gave at the Council of Adult Education in Melbourne entitled The Macrocosm and the Microcosm. The group purchased an adjoining property which they named
Santiniketan Park.
Yes, thank you. In 1968 and constructed a meeting hall.
Santiniketan Lodge.
Yes. Are you following along?
I thought I would.
That's yeah, amazing. That's amazing. That's great.
Go for it.
Yeah. Good. Excellent.
Is this an Indian word?
Yes.
What does it mean? Do you know what it means?
Santi means shanti. It's calm, quiet. Shanti. You know how people change
yeah.
shanti or
yeah.
shanti means calm or peace.
Mm-hmm.
And niketan is like, I think it's literal translation could be a place to live in.
So they called it a peaceful place lodge.
Yeah. Peaceful home lodge.
Again, I think this is what I think it translates to.
Yeah.
But yeah, shanti niketan.
It's like when people say chai tea. It's tea tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Tea,
yeah. And that's the
What is it, like an ATM machine where you're going, going to the ATM machine.
Yeah.
Because my grandma's house was also called shanti niketan, so that's why it's just shanti niketan rather than shanti niketan.
So shanti niketan.
Yeah.
So
I'm
so
glad you're doing this episode.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah. So the group consisted of middle class professionals. It had has been estimated that a quarter were nurses. Looking at you, Ivy.
Well, we have been known to be a bit of a weird lot.
Yeah.
So.
And other medical personnel, and that many were recruited by Johnson. Other medical personnel.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Sort of. I pretend. I work in a hospital, yay.
you're allied health.
Yes, we're allied,
allied health.
That many were recruited by Johnson, who referred them to Hamilton Burns' Hatha yoga classes.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, Hatha
yoga classes.
Members mainly lived in nearby suburbs and townships in the Dandenongs, meeting each Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday evening at the Santiniken Lodge, Crowther House in Olinda, and another property in the area known as the White Lodge.
No ways, Momo.
There's also
a
link to this article.
Oh.
You used to live in Olinda, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like 5 minutes up the road.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. So then we got New Haven. During the late 1960s and the 1970s, New Haven Hospital in Kew was a private psychiatric hospital owned and managed by Marion Villamek,
a Santiniketan member.
Thank you. Many of its staff, I just can't say it as good as that.
It's all good. Okay.
Many of its staff and attending psychiatrists were also members. Imagine being locked up there. Many patients at New Haven were treated with the hallucinogenic drug LSD. I mean, it was kind of the practice back then anyway.
Yeah,
in the
70s.
It was
quite common for them to experiment with what we now consider illegal drugs and dangerous drugs. And it's things like, I mean, like cocaine is still regularly used in cancer treatments. And things like that. Like, they often started as drugs and then became illegal because they're like, oh, the side effects are too bad. So it was very common for mental health patients to be experimented on with LSD and ecstasy and all sorts of random stuff that we know now is not very good and not very helpful.
And that it's not ethical to do that anymore.
You know, ethics is also something that developed over time.
That comes up a lot in our episodes.
We just did an episode about human experimentation and ethics,
which is released. Should be released
today.
The hospital was used to recruit potential new members from among the patients and also to administer LSD to members under the direction of the
Santiniketan psychiatrists
John McKay and Howard Whitaker. One of the original members of the association was given LSD, electroconvulsive therapy, and so shock therapy, and two
lobotomies.
Lobotomies. Also called lobotomy. Right.
Lobotomy.
Yeah.
Hang on, who got the lobotomies?
Yeah.
Patients.
Ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop it.
Said that the one therapy in there that's still used is electroconvulsive ECT.
Yeah,
it's still a recognised and very useful practice.
Yeah. And it's come a long way and it's way less barbaric than it used to be.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of sedatives and, you know, muscle relaxants that go into it now, but the basic premise of it is still the same.
Yeah.
And it works. Yeah.
If you
and they
do
still
it,
don't know quite why it works, but it works.
I think it's similar to other drugs, other medications, that it doesn't work for everybody.
No.
But it is, and it is one of those last line therapies as well.
I had a psychiatrist described as basically you have a whole bunch of balls that are just jumping around in your brain and the shock sends them all up into the air so that they can land in their proper places.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I've met a few people who didn't quite go as well for, and some people take more treatments.
And lobotomies as well is also something that they do occasionally do, particularly with things like epilepsy that can't be treated, because if they take out certain parts of the brain, it helps to control that. However, mm-hmm. it's certainly not done the way that they used to do it with shoving things
ice
in your nose. And,
yeah.
They, yeah.
Ice picks,
and they can
know.
Separate the hemispheres and take out entire hemispheres. Like, there are times and places, but they're very rare these days.
It's usually epilepsy. I don't usually hear it for anything else.
Yeah, it's usually the epilepsy just to stop the seizures. But they're very precise now. It's mm-hmm. very rare that they need to take out entire sections.
Yeah.
But they can usually pinpoint smaller sections that they need to just get rid of.
And yeah, I've heard a lot of, more so about the separation of the hemispheres thing.
Yeah.
Which is
interesting. It's interesting, and there's a lot of side effects involved, but I mean, I guess if you're spending your life having seizures, it's better than that.
Well, that's what medical marijuana should be used for, but...
Well, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, go on, Scott, keep going.
Back to psychiatric hospital.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the original members of the association was given LSD, so electroconvulsive therapy, and 2 lobotomies during the late 1960s. Although the psychiatric hospital had been closed down by 1992, in that year a new inquest was ordered into the death of a New Haven patient in 1975 after new claims that his death had been due to deep sleep therapy.
What is that?
Are you going to click on that one?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Prolonged sleep treatment or continuous narcosis is a psychiatric treatment in which drugs are used to keep patients unconscious for a period of days or weeks.
Isn't that like a coma? Isn't that just like a coma then?
Yeah, but sleep is different to being in a coma.
Yeah.
Because in a coma you might not have any brain function.
Oh, true.
You have a lot of brain function.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. The inquest heard evidence concerning the use of electroconvulsive therapy, LSD, and other practices at New Haven, but found no evidence that deep sleep had been used on this patient. The New Haven building was later reopened as a nursing home, and no connections to its previous owner or uses. Interesting. All right, so the Kailama property, Anne Hamilton Byrne acquired 14 infants. How do you just acquire? They just swan around town like the Pied Piper and be like,
no, but
come, children.
It reminds me of the Umbrella Academy. It's like, I just acquired these 8 children and raised them as my own.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it reminds me of.
Kind of like that, yeah. Oh, anyway, she acquired 14 infants and young children between about 1968 and 1975. Some were the natural children of members of the family. Others had been obtained through irregular adoptions arranged by lawyers, doctors, and social workers within the group who could bypass the normal processes.
That's how you do it.
So dodgy children.
That's how one acquires children.
Yes.
In the 60s.
Yeah. The children's identities were changed using false birth certificates or deed poll, all being given the surname Hamilton Byrne, and dressed alike, even to the extent of their hair being dyed uniformly blonde.
That's terrifying.
That is terrifying.
I opened up the article and I saw the photo and it was terrifying.
Oh, yeah?
It reminds me of Village of the Damned, the original black and white version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which was fucking creepy.
Yeah, because, anything to children in there. White-haired children. So every time now, like, we see, like, really blonde children out somewhere, I'm like, Frank, don't look at them.
But my nephew is a very blonde-haired child, and so is my niece. So.
Not that blonde. Maybe they're baby photos, but still.
They're pretty blonde.
Don't look at them.
Don't look into their eyes.
Yeah, don't look into their eyes. Their eyes will turn black. The children were kept in seclusion and homeschooled at Kailama, a rural property usually referred to as Up Top at Taylor Bay on Lake Ilden near the town of Ilden, Victoria. They were told that Anne Hamilton Byrne was their biological mother and knew the other adults in the group as aunties and uncles. They were denied almost all access to the outside world and subjected to a discipline that included frequent, severe beatings, often for little or no reason, and starvation diets. Sounds like home.
No. Mm.
The children were frequently dosed with the psychiatric drugs. Now I'm going to need a hand.
So, fluvenazine, diazepam.
Oh, I know diazepam.
Haloperidol, chlorpromazine, nitrazepam, oxazepam, trifluperazine, carbamazine, and imipramine. I think about 5 of them are still in use.
What are they?
Most of them are sedatives,
so,
right?
Diazepam, haloperidol, chlorpromazine, which is also called stematol, oxazepam, carbamazine. which
I know that one.
Carbamazepine, which has another name, but I can't remember it right now.
Tegretol?
Tegretol? Yeah, it could be Tegretol.
Schizophrenia, yeah. Epilepsy. Yeah.
Are they all sedatives or antipsychotics?
They're all sedatives. Diazepam, nitrazepam, and oxazepam are all benzodiazepines.
Yep, so Valium.
Yeah, pretty much. Chlorpromazine is commonly used to treat motion sickness.
Yeah.
However, it also has some effect for treating anxiety and schizophrenia.
Yep.
It is used sometimes for schizophrenic treatment, but it's not as common. But most of the time when I see it, it's mostly to keep people who are agitated for medical reasons, to keep them calm because they get very scared, being that they're not in their own environment, and they start lashing out. So
what about
just kind of want them to sleep and get better so that they're not as scared.
What about haloperidol? Because I know...
There's an antipsychotic.
That's very...
It's a strong one, so that's used when people are aggressive beyond the point of reason.
Okay, because I know that name.
Mental health.
Yeah.
I know that, like, I've heard that name before.
Mm.
Yeah, it's generally, that's if we need to give somebody an injection because we honestly can't reason with them, which can be that they've got a medical reason for that or they've had a head injury. Or it could be mental health, but it's usually that's when you hear of people that just sort of like, you know, random hold them still and give them the injection. It's a last resort, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are actually recording, yeah.
Yes, we are. Definitely. We have currently got 21 minutes and 53 seconds.
Okay. Can you mark
that? Anyway, sorry, I keep interrupting with
that's,
all the...
that's good. It's really helpful. It's helpful.
Okay. Mark two.
On reaching adolescence, they were compelled to undergo an initiation involving LSD. While under the influence of the drug, the child would be left in a dark room alone, apart from visits by Hamilton Byrne or one of the psychiatrists from the group.
That's fucking terrifying.
It is, isn't it?
You're like, what, 14 years old? You're left in a room by yourself, tripping on LSD?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
With his white hair and...
At least LSD would give you, like, pretty colours.
Yeah, but
eyes,
I know some people who are fucking freaked out on LSD.
Yeah.
You need light for that.
Yeah, true. So, Siddha Yoga.
Siddha Yoga.
For a few years... Anne Hamilton Byrne developed a connection to the Siddha Yoga movement. I'm getting an okay. Yep.
Sure, you should just read this.
Maybe. They can. Receiving
Shaktipat.
Thank you, Shaktipat. Initiation from Swami
Muktananda.
What was it?
Muktananda.
Okay. And taking the Sanskrit name Ma Yoga Shakti. She took some of the children to stay with Muktananda at his ashram at South Fallsburg, New York, later known as Sri Muktananda Ashram in the Catskill Mountains in 1979 and 1981, and purchased a nearby property as her own base in the US.
Reminds me of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, because in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, they go to the Catskills for the summer.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And have this weird Jewish, like, holiday resort. Only the Jewish people from New York go there for the summer, and they all go there for the summer. It's, like, a bit cultish. Because they're like, yeah, we're all going to the Catskills for the summer. It's
but
like
the friend got to go because they thought she was the plumber. Remember?
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's great.
Dancing, but Jewish.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah, like that, yeah.
Yeah. Watch Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's hilarious. Yeah, it's so about good. A woman comedian in the 1950s.
Okay.
It's great.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Sarah Hamilton Byrne tells how... How do you say it again, Shura?
Muktananda.
Would give a practice audience, private audience, thank you, or darshan, once a week to Hamilton Byrne's group. He once asked the children if they would like to leave the family and live with him at his
Gurudeva Siddha Peetha
ashram in
Ganeshpuri,
India. The children all gave an enthusiastic yes, but were later punished by Hamilton Byrne for disloyalty. She states that Hamilton Byrne eventually caused a lot of trouble in the Sri Muktananda ashram, and some of Muktananda's devotees defected to the family.
Oh.
Yeah. Sarah was present when Swami, oh wow, that's a big word.
Tejumayananda.
Thank you. Was initiated into the family. She states that she could not understand why he would want to join a sect where everyone was so miserable when it seemed that everyone around Muktananda was so happy. All right, so we got police intervention. Sarah,
finally.
It's only been like 2 decades. Sarah Hamilton Burns, that's the daughter, was expelled by her adoptive mother in 1987. Oh wow, I forgot about that part. Because of arguing and rebellious behaviour. With the support of a private investigator and others, she then played an instrumental role in bringing the family to the attention of the Victorian police. I just can't believe it went on for so long without anyone, like, checking on these kids and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, because they weren't in the records.
They're
because,
not in the system.
False birth certificates. Nobody was missing them.
And they were acquired, yeah.
Yeah.
Acquired.
And they probably never went into the schooling system or anything. Like, that would have just been completely off the radar.
As a result, a raid took place at Kailama on Friday, 14th of August, 1987, and all children were removed from the premises. Sarah later went on to study medicine and became a qualified doctor. She also learned that she had been adopted and eventually met her biological mother. After the raid in 1987, Anne Hamilton Byrne and her husband William remained outside Australia for the next 6 years. Operation Forest, an investigation involving police in Australia, the UK and the US, resulted in their arrest in June 1993 by the FBI in the town of Hurleyville in the Catskills in New York. They were extradited to Australia and charged with conspiracy to defraud and to commit perjury by falsely registering the births of 3 unrelated children as their own triplets. Elizabeth Whittaker, wife of the psychiatrist Howard Whittaker, was their co-defendant. The Hamilton Byrnes pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of making a false declaration and were fined $5,000 each. Ooh, That's it. Yeah, the conspiracy charge against Whittaker was dropped, but she was convicted of falsely obtaining nearly $23,000 between 1983 and 1987.
So she was convicted of something.
Not Whittaker, though, not Hamilton Byrne.
Oh, Whittaker. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Margot McCallum, age 64, was convicted of falsely obtaining $28,000 between 1978 and 1988. Joy Travelin?
Travelin? That's how I pronounce it.
Okay. Age 56 was convicted of falsely obtaining over $38,000 between 1979 and 1988. Helen Buchanan, age 49, was convicted of falsely obtaining almost $15,000 between 1980 and 1987. Wow. It's all about the money and not about the bloody children, isn't it?
What about all the wrongdoings? Like giving them drugs and...
Yes, drugging children and acquiring them and,
Again, I guess there was just not enough records for them to be able to chase them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they went that's after probably, what they could, I guess.
Yeah, that's probably why they were chasing them for the money, because they could at least prove that.
Yeah.
You know, at least it would be something.
Mm.
It still sucks.
Yeah. All right. So, litigation. In August 2009, 2 individuals received financial compensation from Anne Hamilton Byrne after suing her. Her granddaughter, Rebecca Cook Hamilton, sued her in 2007 for alleged psychiatric and psychological illnesses. She alleged that she received, quote, cruel and inhuman treatment from Hamilton Byrne and her servants, including beatings, being locked in a freezing shed overnight, oh my God, that'd be awful, and being forced to take medications. She also alleged that she was given insufficient food. Her reward was estimated to be $250,000. Not a lot for that.
Not
suffering.
Enough. Never enough.
Never enough.
Whenever anyone ever sues anyone for psychological and physical
damage. Yeah, it's like, how do you put a monetary value on that?
How do you put a monetary value on human suffering?
Yeah. Especially as a child. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
A former member of the family, Cynthia Chan, alleged that she paid the sum of $352,115 to Hamilton Byrne for real estate in Olinda, Victoria, but the property was never transferred to her. She also alleged that she paid the sum of 70, $1,400 to Hamilton Byrne for another property, but this too was never transferred to her. Why do you keep doing that then? Just keep giving her more money.
Yeah, give me more properties. Give me more properties. You're not going to give
and
me.
And she's like, heh, 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 sure.
It's not Monopoly.
No, I lost the card. I'll give it to you later. Hamilton Byrne said she had no memory of the matter. Oh, how funny that. Chan's judgment was estimated at $250,000. In the 1980s, police estimated that Hamilton Byrne's fortune could be as much as $50 million.
Mm. Ooh.
Yeah.
So you said that this was in the West. None of this was in the West.
No, I thought maybe she ended up going and living in the West.
Well, yeah, because Olinda and Eildon is all the East.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Because I knew it was the East when we saw the film.
Mm.
The film came out in 2016, by the way.
Mm.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So timeline. So we got 1960s. The family begins recruiting members from patients at New Haven Clinic and giving them LSD. That would. I wonder if a movie, like a fictional movie, has kind of been based on.
I mean, quite possibly.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of American Horror Story, the second.
I feel like they weren't unique in the, you know, the cultish kind of environment, yeah. Giving everyone LSD in the 60s.
Probably no, not. I mean like the part of recruiting them from a psychiatric hospital though. Like, just going there, like, ooh, that patient looks like they could come live at the family. Let's take them and give them a...
I sadly feel like that wasn't all that unique with them either. Like, I think that was a fairly common thing. You prey on the people that are the weakest.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, sadly true. They seem to have a lot of high-up people.
Yeah,
to
like doctors and shit as well.
That's how they got away with it for so many years.
And that's the scary thing about this whole thing is that so many doctors were involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
everyone, and lawyers.
And
as
lawyers
well.
And people you think who are in society who are there to be good people.
And help people.
And help
and educated
people.
Educated too.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trustworthy.
Yeah, educated, and yet they fell for Lady Jesus.
He's
like walking around acquiring children.
Jesus, Buddha, and Krishna.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. So 1961, Anne Hamilton Byrne meets Raynor Johnson and they found the family. In 1964, Johnson buys land at Fernie Creek, Victoria, and builds
Santiniquetin Lodge.
Thank you. Which becomes the headquarters of the family. In 1965, Hamilton Byrne marries South African naval officer Michael Riley, but the marriage does not last. 1968, Hamilton Byrne begins adopting children, along with her partner Bill. Both change their name to Hamilton Byrne, but do not marry at this stage. 1970s, Hamilton Byrne buys Broom Farm in Langdon Green, England, and a property in the Catskills, New York, near
Muktanandas
Ashram. She also marries Bill. 1983, like, look at the gaps in these years as well. Yeah. So ridiculous.
13 years
like,
difference.
70s, like, hardly anything happens in the 70s except she marries Bill and gets property. Like, you know, what's happening to all these children? In 1983, Australian Federal Police go to Kai Lama looking for missing girl Kim Holm. They didn't mention that in the actual article.
Yeah.
Hmm. Can you look up her name?
Kim Holm?
Yeah.
Yeah.
1986, New Haven closes and is later the subject of a lawsuit brought by relatives of deceased group members. Anne Hamilton Byrne wins, obviously. Did you look up the...
I'm looking it up.
Okay,
keep reading.
All right. 1987, Sarah Hamilton Byrne is expelled by Anne and later talks to police, resulting in raid on Kai Lama. Children are taken away from the property. 1988, seven female group members are jailed for social security fraud. 1989, Victorian police establish Operation Forest to investigate the family.
I wonder why it's called Operation Forest.
I think they just give weird names to...
Random.
Random.
Like
and it's meant to be random, so that people... If people overhear them talking, they don't know what they're talking about.
I've also heard of an Operation Paperclip.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with paperclips.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're given pretty random names.
I looked up Kim Holm, there's nothing about her on the internet.
Oh, wow. What
there's, like, one article in a bit about the cult, about the family.
Yeah.
And just a timeline, again, of what had happened.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't know.
Hmm. 1990, former Grip solicitor Peter Kibbe starts cooperating with police and confesses to forging birth records on orders from Hamilton Byrne. Former auntie, quotation marks, Patricia McFarlane gives information to police about adoption scams. In 1993, Anne and Bill are arrested in the Catskills by the FBI after phone calls are traced to Australia. 1995, Sarah Hamilton Byrne's book, Unseen, Unheard, Unknown, is published by Penguin. Oh my god, I need to get that. Does anyone have it? I need to read it. 2001, Sarah Hamilton Byrne visits Bill before he dies. Anne Hamilton Byrne attends his funeral in her only public appearance since her conviction. 2009, in a spirit of forgiveness, Sarah Hamilton Byrne takes the initiative in seeing Anne at her compound in Olinda, Victoria. In 2013, it is reported that Anne is close to death with dementia in a Melbourne nursing home, and that there is a power struggle within the cult over Anne's successor as leader of the group. In an interview with ABC local radio in Ballarat, in response to these reports, Ben Shenton, who had been adopted by the family at the age of 18 months, said the group had become a, quote, toothless tiger. What does he mean?
It means that, that like, it's lost its bite.
Oh, okay.
Because it's all bark and no bite.
Yeah, it's got nothing left.
Yeah.
2014, secret diaries of Raynald Johnson are released to the public that give an authoritative insider's view on how the cult started, what its aim was, and how it grew. 2016, the family documentary is released at the Melbourne International Film Festival. It is produced by Anne Grieve and written, directed, and co-produced by Rosie Jones. It's a good film, you should see it. And 2019, Anne Hamilton Byrne died at the age of 97 on the 13th of June.
So she clearly wasn't close to death
in 2013. She wasn't.
No, not close.
She still had a few years left in her. Yeah. Yes, it's...
That's the family.
That's the family, family. Yeah.
Creepy.
Did you want me to read about the feet?
Oh, one interesting fact that... So, the daughter who wrote the book, Sarah Hamilton Byrne, she changed her name. Her name's Sarah Moore now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I could talk about her. Let's go a little bit about her life.
What would people like? More about Sarah Hamilton Byrne or feet?
I reckon
the feet.
Feet? Okay. Let's talk about feet.
Fine. I just feel like feet should be another episode, but okay.
You can do it. You don't have to do it.
Talk I also want to check in because I know a single.
Yes.
As work tomorrow.
I do work tomorrow.
What do you want to do tomorrow? We can end it here if you're going to be a short episode.
Yeah, I might go to bed.
Okay, we'll end it here then. Okay, so what did you all think about the family?
I like my family better.
That's the end of the
story. Anne Hamilton Byrne sounds a little bit like my mother.
I don't know. Up. I would like some free LSD.
My mum kept it for herself. She did not share. She did not share.
We were all talking about getting matching hoodies, and I think that's one step away from all dying eyed hair blonde.
I've got some bleach.
I'm sorry, we're all naturally brunette. Can we just keep it this way?
Yeah. This is so much easier.
I find it very scary how long they went without detection.
Yes, exactly.
And when they did get caught, they got like a $5,000 penalty. I was what?
Yeah, exactly.
They were never convicted of anything like child neglect or child endangerment or anything
child abuse.
Like, they weren't convicted of anything like that because they obviously didn't have enough evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
those
know.
Kids really were off the
I'm
radar because the paper trail had been so falsified.
Yeah.
Like nobody, like they probably had no idea that they even had kids for most of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're all acquired kids too.
Acquired, yeah.
Acquired,
quote unquote.
I love how
a new word for like dodgy happening.
Acquired. You know, I do use that when
it's
I say
like
I'm going to acquire a movie or a TV series.
Like the kids fell off the back of a truck.
Yeah. Oh my god, I need to do one about the boy in the box.
Oh yeah.
I love the boy in the box story. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Maybe another day.
Yes, not today.
Yeah, I just can't believe that.
I wonder how much therapy did Sarah have to go through?
A lot.
Oh, yeah.
You should totally watch the film.
And the rest of the kids. Like, you don't really know the names of the rest of the kids, but...
Yeah, because they didn't come forward. But a couple of them did.
Imagine what they went through. Like, as you know, you mentioned earlier, there's no price on human suffering, but...
Well, a lot of them...
God knows, like, you know...
A lot of it feels like they were just trying to beat them into submission and then kind of wipe their integrity, like, clean. Because with, like, the beating, the drug use, and then locking them away.
So they'll never leave.
What was the whole purpose?
Yeah, what was
I think
Anne Hamilton Burn is crazy. That's the whole purpose.
No, and so they never leave. You're right. So, like...
But why did she want all these children to begin with?
Why not?
Yeah, but what
does anyone want children to begin with?
Where's her manifesto?
Reincarnation of Jesus.
Exactly.
Yeah, but Jesus didn't bring all these children together, drug them, and keep them in his house.
But having said that, right?
Yeah, we don't know.
The Bible wasn't clear on that.
If her aim was to create a bunch of, you know, mindless children to follow her word, then why did she kick Sarah out for being rebellious? And how did Sarah remain rebellious in spirit enough through all that treatment?
Because she's strong.
To actually be rebellious enough to get them to go, you know what, you're out.
Yeah, because she kept defying them, which is great. And it's like, obviously they didn't completely beat Sarah. Like, you beat it out of her.
Yeah. That's what I find interesting about Anne Hamilton Burn, though, is because a lot of people who have these cults, they have some sort of manifesto. They have some sort of very poorly made reason for why they're doing this. So think about the Kool-Aid and the huge suicide that happened. What's that one? The
Jonestown.
Yeah.
He at least had reason. It was a sick, sadistic, not to make sense. Reason that didn't make sense. But he had a manifesto. He had a reason.
Yeah.
In no way have we ever really found out why Anne did this, other than that she did, and she had a cult, and that's it.
But it did seem like she was acquiring, because it said somewhere... That she, like, you know, she was charged with acquiring funds falsely.
Yeah, so that's about getting donations and stuff.
The whole heap of wealth and things like that. So somewhere in there, like, she was acquiring a lot of money through this process.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, apart from that, there doesn't seem to be any real benefit for her.
Yeah, I know. Other than the money, why?
Yeah.
And the children are a expense.
I feel like I do need to read this. It's a very short article about Sarah Moore. It's actually more creepy than the... Well, not creepy, it's darker and sadder, I guess, than the actual article. So, Sarah Moore, formerly known as Sarah Hamilton Burn, was an Australian medical doctor and writer who spent her childhood in the family, a new religious movement run by Anne Hamilton Burn.
Was?
Her adoptive...
Was? Is she dead?
Wait, her adoptive mother.
Okay.
She was instrumental in having the group investigated by the police in Victoria, Australia. She later wrote a book about her experiences in the family. I'm really going to look up that book tonight, see if I can download it. So early life and education. Yeah, it's very interesting. I was saying, like, yeah, what about her made her stronger than the others and available and, you know, able to be able to be kicked out for being rebellious and then, you know, still go on and keep fighting. So Moore's biological mother was an unmarried teenager who put her daughter up for adoption in 1969. Moore was adopted by Anne Hamilton Burn, a charismatic yoga teacher, who gathered a number of followers around her who believed she was the incarnation of Christ. So I guess it was about her ego, really, if you look at basic Freudian crap like ego. Moore was meant to be one of the, quote, inheritors of the earth after a Holocaust took place. So they believed that something was going to come, she was going to inherit the earth. Hamilton Burn had many followers who worked in the medical and nursing professions, which is scary, and who manipulated the adoption process so that 14 children were adopted by her. These children, including Moore, were told that Hamilton Burn was their biological mother. Along with the other adopted children, Moore was brought up in houses that were owned by Hamilton Burn, who had several properties in various countries. Moore later estimated that Hamilton Burn might have been worth $150 million. I think it was a bit more in the other article.
Just $50
million. $50 million in the other article.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That's $150, the daughter's saying. Moore spent the first 4 to 5 years of her life in a house called Wimbera in the Dandenong Ranges east of Melbourne, Victoria. After that, she was moved to Kailama, a group house at Lake Eildon, also in Victoria. Life for the children at Kailama was unremittingly strict and even brutal. Hamilton Byrne herself was usually not there, so the children were supervised by women from the family who were known as, quote, aunties.
That word just died to sound so creepy.
Aunties.
Aunties, yeah.
Aunties.
It's a bit like,
go on.
Aunt Lydia, like in the Handmaid's Tale, the aunt, yeah.
Get fucked, Aunt Lydia.
Did you watch the newest episode?
Yeah,
that's good. These women discipline the children by inflicting severe beatings for the most trivial reasons or no reason at all. Another common disciplinary measure was food deprivation.
It's such a no-no. Like, you don't deprive anyone from food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
We all feel very strongly about that.
Yeah.
Yes. Agreed. Give me the beatings. Do not take my food.
Okay,
yeah.
Like,
couldn't handle that. Don't
like
take the food.
Door,
yeah.
Food deprivation
torture. Yeah, exactly.
We literally have a loaf and a half garlic bread on the table.
Which we are still nibbling on.
Trying.
Yeah. Trying. Taking it for the tea.
It's down from a total of four. So
we've done pretty good.
And how many bags of pita bread have we got?
Yeah.
2.5.
And each one of us has actually eaten one pizza each.
Oh, I thought everyone would eat two.
So did I.
Someone get a bucket of hummus. To go
with
the pita bread.
Yeah.
More buckets, yes. More buckets. the children said it's food deprivation. No. The children lived in fear and were deprived of all love and affection. Despite this, they always hoped for some show of affection from Hamilton Byrne, who they believed was their mother and who visited Kailama from time to time. Yeah, you do as an abused child. You do still hope that the abuser will love you.
Isn't that a little bit of Stockholm Syndrome in that too?
A little bit, yeah.
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 That's so sad.
Yeah. Mm. They were also led to believe that the world outside was an evil and dangerous place and that they would end up in the gutter or worse if they ever left the family. So that's like what you were saying, Mo, is just like beating all their spirit out of them and being like, well, you're not good enough to leave. You're not good. You're not going to make it out there and that you'll die if you leave. Yeah.
It's similar to gaslighting, but it's...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And similar to what abusive parents do anyway, some abusive parents do anyway, and be like...
An abusive partners.
Yes, yeah. And be like, you'll never amount to anything without me.
Or yeah. You won't find anyone else.
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah. Exactly.
Because that was... as a kid as well, you must think that these people who are beating you are, like, so powerful.
Yes,
so
yeah.
You must think, I should probably listen to them.
Yeah, exactly, because you don't know any better. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially in this sort of environment, so because these children don't see anyone else.
Mm.
In
is it the aunties?
Yes, in children who go to school and deal with other children and other adults who don't do the things that their abusive parents do.
I don't know.
They have no reference point, these
yeah.
particular children. They don't have a reference point of this is what an adult is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is how other children my age get treated by their parents.
Yeah.
Even when even though I wasn't in homeschool, I still thought that everyone else copped abuse at home. Like,
okay.
I just thought that was normal.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't until I was probably in high school that I realised, parents are nice to their children sometimes.
What about teachers, though?
What about them?
Well, they're another adult. They're not parents, but they're another adult.
Yeah.
Who is in authority of you.
Mm.
Like, did you think that they would behave the same way as your parents?
Yeah. Like, my mother, for instance, would be nice, especially in public, and then completely not nice at home, so I didn't trust the teachers either. Like, they're nice then. I thought, I wonder if they go home and beat their children, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, they're all
that
the same.
Sense.
Yeah, like, they're all the same. You don't know. Anyway, another common form of discipline was the administration of prescription drugs that were obtained by the followers in the medical and nursing professions. These drugs were routinely used to pacify the children. When they were older, they could also be forced to take the hallucinogenic drug LSD as a kind of religious ritual. This was known as, quote, going through, and was supposed to promote self-awareness, helping the person to let go of blocks. Moore was forced to go through in 1984 when she was 15. The experience took place at a property owned by the family in England and went on for some days because she was given repeated doses of the drug. Wow.
Oof.
She found it a traumatic experience and was later convinced that she had suffered lasting damage from the drug.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Taking these drugs as an adult is already bad enough, but can you imagine on like a developing mind?
Yes.
Like, a 15-year-old.
Being done over several days.
Yeah.
Yeah. People.
Marijuana, like if you take it, I think before you're 23, like, it can still have those effects. Like,
yeah.
That's why they say you should take it after, like,
yeah.
You know,
There is a recognized syndrome from negative effects from marijuana. The name I can't remember at the moment, but there is an, it has, like, you know, the memory loss and the, the changes in personality, and it's recognized that that does happen. It can happen. It's not.
That happened to a neighbor of mine, actually, when I was growing up. Like, she was actually having, ECT treatment, and it was because, she'd gone into some kind of psychosis after marijuana use in her teenage years, and she was only in her early 20s. But, some days she was just way slower than other days, and especially after she'd come back from, like, treatment.
Mm.
And, she had a little kid and stuff, and,
repeated doses, though, too. Like, most adults won't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, most adults just do a dose at a party or at a concert, and then that's it. Like, repeated doses over days.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
How do you guys feel about, like, microdosing in terms of that?
Yeah.
Therapy.
But that's the thing, microdosing is done very controlled.
Very, exactly, it's
very
all about control. Yeah.
And it's to the point where you almost don't feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, as well, people who do that are consenting adults.
Yeah.
These are not consenting adults, these are children.
They didn't sign up for it.
Exactly. And that's the thing, I don't care if you microdose, as long as it doesn't affect what you do.
Later? Yes.
Okay.
I'm curious.
Yeah. As Moore grew up, she became more assertive and began arguing with those who supervised the children, including Hamilton Byrne herself. She would not like that.
Oh, God, no.
After arguing once too often, she was expelled from the family in 1987 at the age of 17.
Or worse, expelled.
Yes. She was... she was taken... So that was at age 17. She was then taken in by a family she had met. How could you trust another family? Oh, my God. After a time... Yes?
Desperation.
You're afraid,
surely anything is better than where you're at.
Yeah, mm-hmm. True.
Yeah.
So, after a time, she was introduced to a private investigator known only as Helen D, who had been investigating the family for several years.
Maybe it was my mom.
Helen D.
Was it? Was your mother a private investigator?
I wouldn't know if your parents are boss PI. Like, you wouldn't know.
True.
From Helen D, Moore learnt that Anne Hamilton Byrne was a fraud and that she herself was not Hamilton Byrne's daughter at all. She had, in fact, been adopted. Imagine finding that out as an adult, too. Helen D introduced Moore to two police women who won her confidence. This eventually led to a police raid on Kai Lama on 14th of August 1987. A number of children were taken into custody, then placed in care along with Moore. A number of the aunties faced criminal charges and were eventually convicted of fraudulently obtaining money from the Department of Social Security.
So all those names we heard in that other article were names of the aunties.
Yeah, who got convicted.
Right.
Yeah, of fraud.
Okay.
And Department of Social Security back then was like Department of Human Services, so essentially,
yeah.
In 1990, former group solicitor Peter Kibbe started cooperating with police and confessed to forging birth records on orders from Hamilton Byrne. Former auntie Patricia McFarlane gave information to police and about adoption scams. Hamilton Byrne and her husband Bill were overseas at the time. We know this. They were extradited from the United States in 1993 and faced criminal charges. They were only convicted of making false statements in regard to the adoption of Moore and other children. They were each fined $5,000. So, career of Sarah Moore. Moore wrote a book, Unseen, Unheard, Unknown, detailing her experience in the family. It was published by Penguin in 1995. She went on to study medicine and became a qualified doctor, working at a number of Melbourne hospitals. As a doctor, she did extensive volunteer work in India and Thailand, where she worked with Karen refugees on the Thai-Burma border, but still returned to Australia, where she carried on a medical practice in the Dandenong Ranges. Legal issues. Moore was charged with forging prescriptions of pethidine.
Oh,
poor thing.
Why?
In July 2005, she avoided a jail sentence at Ringwood Magistrates Court in Victoria. She was allowed to give an undertaking to be of good behaviour for 4 years and to do community service. She had pleaded guilty to forging prescriptions to obtain pethidine between November 2004 and April 2005.
Probably for personal use.
Yes. I was going to say, Moore was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. Amen.
Surprise.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Aren't we?
Pethidine is a pain reliever, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very addictive pain reliever.
It's not terribly used these days because of that. It's so it's a synthetic opioid.
Okay.
So it's like morphine, but man-made.
Yep.
Yes. And yeah, we don't use it all that frequently. We've got ones that have less effects, and yeah, but it's all very highly controlled.
I remember when I was younger, my mum being about the pethidine.
Yeah. Mm. But even like between 2005 and now, the legislation has become so much tighter. Yeah.
Exactly.
And like, you know, all those drugs that they were saying they were giving the kids to sedate them.
Yeah.
You know, in the 70s, yeah, sure, you know, mm-hmm. you could get them easily. Nowadays, they're locked in a very secure safe.
Yeah.
And you have to have two people sign them out and everything. So it gets a lot harder to do these things that they got away with.
Exactly. Eventually, Moore set up a charity called Barefoot Basics, which aims to provide health assistance to Indigenous and displaced people in countries like India. The charity was approved for tax-deductible purposes. She did charity work overseas whenever she could afford to make the trip. Personal life. In December 2008, Moore was in hospital and lost her left leg as a result of what she considered to be mistreatment by hospital staff after a suicide attempt. Oh. She used a wheelchair for the rest of her life. In August 2009, Moore had an emotional reunion with Hamilton Byrne, which was covered by the Herald Sun newspaper. Hamilton Byrne, of course they were, they're all over it. Hamilton Byrne, who was then 87 years old, said she was now, quote, ready to die, after being reunited with her, quote, favourite daughter. The reunion took place at Hamilton Byrne's sprawling compound at Olinda, Victoria. She's a bloody piece of work, isn't she?
Yeah.
Hamilton Byrne said that people who accused her of mistreating the children were, quote, lying bastards, and she would love to, quote, put them right, but could not. Put them right with her stick, smacking them all. She stated that she could have sued her critics but had decided against it. Moore said that she loved Hamilton Byrne but had mixed feelings about her. She regarded her as being responsible for the abuse of the children. Hamilton Byrne blamed the aunties. Of course she did. That was as far as Hamilton Byrne would go in acknowledging any wrongdoing, Moore said. Otherwise, she was unrepentant. She described Hamilton Byrne as a powerful and charismatic person and thought that she initially meant well in creating the cult and collecting the children.
Collecting?
Yeah.
It's a new word.
She completed her collection.
Yeah, like Pokemon. Right. These acts, she thought, were Hamilton Byrne's compensation and, quote, delusional repair for her own childhood, which involved having an absent father and a psychotic mother. In a 2009 blog post, Moore said that she had decided to see Hamilton Byrne again after going through a form of therapy called the Hoffman Process, after which she thought it was important to forgive. Moore became a Buddhist in 2009 after meeting a Buddhist... Is it
Lama?
Is it Lama?
Like Dalai Lama.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Didn't know if it was like a capital I or what was going on.
Lama.
Who inducted her into the belief system of Buddhism. She said this brought her enormous relief and joy and meant that she was now rid of her burden. She felt she had the support of a teacher / guru, the Buddha, and the Dhamma, a word usually translated as righteousness, and denoting the righteous of spiritual path and the community of Buddhists. This new belief system made sense of her life and gave her a perspective on things, particularly where she had gone wrong by taking on too much spiritually and emotionally. Having found a guru whom no one could find fault with, she felt that she had a psychological and spiritual support that she had lacked since she was expelled from the family. Moore died in May 2016 of heart failure. At her Buddhist-themed funeral, fellow survivors from the family spoke on her behalf.
So she died before...
She died before Anne Hamilton Byrne did.
And she was like, I'm on deathbed, I'm on deathbed.
I know, right?
2013.
Yeah, I know.
So she was only 47, which is interesting because the heart failure, I mean, I know she's got mental health issues and she clearly had some...
Drug
issues that went along with that. Mm. So that certainly wouldn't have helped her heart, but it's interesting that it's heart failure at 47 that really denotes that she was not kind on herself.
No.
Or, you know, even that early childhood experience of all those drugs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Did not help.
I mean, you can't really blame her.
No. But especially by then she lost her leg and she was in a wheelchair.
No,
and,
well, I mean, yeah. It just is pretty hard life. I mean, you know, like it...
It sounds like she pretty much worked herself to death as well.
People cope the way they do, and whether it's a good coping method or not is, you know, like, sometimes you don't know until after you've done it, unfortunately. But, you know, like...
Well, it's good that
47
she...
is just very young.
It is very young. But it's good that she, like, found peace with Buddhism and stuff.
I'd love to know what happened to all the other kids.
Yeah. I think... I'm pretty sure a few of them were in that documentary.
Yeah, they were. There was definitely one of the men.
Wait, have you guys seen the documentary?
Yeah.
We saw it
when it came out. Yeah.
I wonder if it's on Netflix or something.
Don't think it is, but I'm sure I can acquire it.
Scout has their ways.
I will acquire it.
Add it to your collection.
Yeah, and add it to my collection.
Well, I'll acquire some wine and CDs. CDs, we can have a night in and view it.
Yes, we should do that.
It's available on ABC iView, I think.
Is it really?
Yes.
I've seen it somewhere.
That's very easy.
You don't have
requirement. No.
You don't have to do any dodgy
requirements. No dodgy requirements.
A 3-part investigation that chronicles the rise and fall of Australia's most notorious cult. I think this might be a separate one, but there is a documentary on ABC iView called The Cult of the Family.
Oh, it's different. Actual documentary.
It's a 3-episode look at the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting too.
It's really good because it'll at least highlight from Miss Moore's 17-year-old self to after, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And dig through the past.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's the family, folks.
Yes. No white hair.
In our own?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Ours is certainly less dysfunctional.
And less drugs.
Yeah.
Well, illegal
less
drugs.
Less food deprivation.
No food deprivation.
Over food. Lots of food.
Lots of food.
We're all
feeders.
Yes.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Cool.
Okay, well, I guess we'll leave it there then.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry about your feet.
I lost my feet.
Defeat.
I was defeated.
Defeated.
I want to hear about the feet.
Next episode.
Next episode. Next episode.
See, now you don't have to search for an article because you've got your feet one for next time.
I do have my feet.
Cool. All right. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening and thank you for staying with us.
Yeah. And to make comments, like things, talk to us.
Love to Sharon.
Love to Sharon.
Thanks for our 1-star review, Sharon.
That was
a Wikipedia article that we read from with no research.
But we did have a little bit of research behind. We had seen the documentary.
Yeah, it's highly researched.
That's not
viewing.
A layman's version of research.
Yeah. Research via osmosis.
I saw this movie this one time.
Yeah, that's
now
my
I am
research.
An expert.
Yeah, thanks, Sharon.
Love you, Sharon.
Don't leave more 1-star reviews like Sharon.
Yeah,
that's not nice.
Talk to us.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we'll leave it there.
Okay.
Okay. See you next time.
Ciao, ciao.